Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of the world society. To those of you who have come to know that all of the world's religious, political, military, economic, academic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. The news yesterday is just another affirmation of this. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. The reason I say that the news is just an affirmation of this is obvious. We had another video purporting to show the cruel and savage death of an individual by the Islamic State. And we had the world saying that this video shows that the Islamic State is morally bankrupt. I would ask you, who struck the first blow? Who bombed Iraq? Who demonstrated shock and awe and celebrated the shock and awe where buildings were brought down, people trapped alive in them, many burned alive by the explosions and subsequent fires? Who struck first? If burning people alive, caged in, is morally bankrupt, and it is, who is the instigator? And who is responding? I would ask you this. If it's okay for the United States to play high moral leader and invade Iraq, Afghanistan as well, bomb Syria, bomb Libya, in fact, bomb these places back to the point that even savages won't live there because the buildings are rubble. The entire cities are reduced to rubble. When we demonstrated shock and awe and used our military, particularly our Air Force, to bomb Iraq and killed anywhere from 100,000 to 1,000,000, depending on whose reports you find the most credible, recognizing that no Iraqi had harmed an American, no Afghani had harmed an American, and that those we killed were almost exclusively civilians, quite often women and children. When we did that, and we thought that, oh, we were great. Boy, patriotism soared. People couldn't wait to rally around the troops and thank them for the great job they were doing. And yet we call the burning of a man in a cage who was in the military, who had been shot down because he was bombing the people who killed him. He was a direct belligerent. He struck first. Islamic State hasn't gone out of its way to attack Jordan, and yet Jordan bombed Syria to kill members of the Islamic State. They knocked down one of the planes that was sent over Syria to kill them. And they killed the pilot. Who struck first? Who has perpetrated the most carnage? Who has been the most savage? Now, I recognize here that the thought of a single individual dying, and by the way, you can't watch it. Maybe you can, and maybe I'm just way true Neanderthal myself, and the fact that I spent 30 minutes this morning trying to actually see the video as opposed to see some moron pretending to be knowledgeable, making all sorts of ignorant statements about the Islamic State and Islam, showing a screenshot or two from the video or showing a minute of the video, highly edited, to remove the parts that they thought might be offensive. But you can't even watch the damn video. And, you know, I understand that showing a painful death of a single individual is far more emotionally moving than is showing a picture of a city that has been devastated by aerial bombardment. And in the one case, you have an entire city that's a complete infrastructure destroyed and thousands of lives sacrificed. Women, children, buried alive. The elderly, unable to escape. And in the other, you have a single individual who was, in fact, a belligerent in the fight, who struck first, being killed. And yet, the image of a single person being killed is more moving. Something wrong with the human psyche and that ability to make a proper distinction between those things. But the media and politicians, they don't want you to see it. And we've talked about this before. They don't want you to associate savagery with Islam. They don't want you to equate reprehensible, barbarian tactics with the Islamic religion. So while these idiots are shouting Allahu Akbar as they're acting as jihadists, as they're being savages, it's really hard to disassociate Islam from that crime. And it's a horrific crime. Now, again, I'm told that the video shows the fire, and in fact, I've seen parts of the video where a line of fire is a man's sitting there in his orange jumpsuit. That's to mock Abu Ghraib, where America's CIA tortured and mocked Muslims. That was stupid. We brought that carnage and that mockery on ourselves because of the stupidity and immorality of our CIA. Now, you want to talk about morally bankrupt? Well, torturing people is morally bankrupt. America did that. Own it, America. That's why this guy is in this orange jumpsuit. So he's in this orange jumpsuit. He's got some places where the jumpsuit is apparently wet, and the implication is that it's gasoline. Personally, I doubt it. But that's the implication. And then you have the a line of flammable material, probably gasoline, that goes between where a bunch of Islamic jihadists with their faces covered. If you get your face covered, you're trying to hide your identity, which means you're involved in something that is gang-related. You're into gang mentality, where you want to be part of the gang, but you know what you're doing is wrong, and you don't want to personally be identified in it. If people were capable of thinking, and religious people aren't, if they were capable of thinking, they'd recognize, well, that's a hell of a sign. And I should probably figure out why I'm covering my face. And they're surrounding this thing, and they're all shouting, Allahu Akbar. And one guy with a torch lights the line of gasoline between him and his circle of jihadists and the cage. And what you see is then, rather than going to the man in the cage, the fire goes around the perimeter of the cage. Now, if you had put the man in the cage and then doused him with gasoline, that would not be the case. It would go directly to the man. But it didn't. It goes around the perimeter of the cage. It's staged to create an effect. Now, there's another aspect of this where a person crouching down, and we don't even know if it's a real person at this point. We don't know. Then has a bulldozer dumping debris over the top of the cage and crushing the cage. And that's from the snippets that I was able to get from having to endure long diatribes from idiots that have never read the Quran and have no concept of what Islam's about. And while that is savage, and should be shown, by the way, along with the purported beheadings, because if you're incapable of looking Islamic terrorism in the face, then you're incapable of making an informed decision as to what to do about it. If you're unwilling to consider the behavior of the world's best Muslims, these jihadists, those Muslims that are devoutly following Muhammad's orders and example, then you ought not ever say anything about the religion. You ought to just acknowledge that you're apathetic, that you're ignorant, and that you're incapable of forming a rational conclusion. But if more people would actually have access to these videos, as opposed to them being scrubbed from the internet for fear that people actually watch them and become informed, then more folks would realize that their politicians are lying to them, particularly the abominator. That they're lying to them. Trying to disassociate Islam from the Islamic State and from the horrible actions that we've witnessed. Now, Muhammad himself told Muslims that if a Muslim didn't show up on time for the obligatory prayers on Friday, that the good Muslims were to burn their homes down with them inside. That was Muhammad's way of encouraging people to submit to his influence. We'll be back. Does it matter to you who struck first? Does it? Does it matter to you who killed more people? Does it matter to you who's more savage? Does it? When the United States firebombed Hamburg, Germany, burning, trapping, just like they were in a cage, and burning alive 50, 100, 150,000 women and children, none of whom had attacked and killed an American. When we did that, how was that not 100 times? In fact, you can't even call it 150,000 times more savage, because they were civilians. They were women and children, elderly men. The guy that was killed in that cage was a Jordanian pilot who was engaged in trying to blow to smithereens the very people who ignited him, lit him on fire. So, with the realization that the United States killed 150,000 Germans that had never attacked America, that were nowhere, would not even consider attacking America, that had no means to attack America, and we firebombed them and killed 100, 150,000 of them by firebombing their city while they slept. And you want to tell me that we can call what happened in that cage in Syria morally bankrupt? When the United States firebombed Japanese cities, with the express purpose of burning women and children and elderly alive. Night after night, killing as many as 50 to 100,000 civilians a night. And you want to tell me that we're in a position to call what the Islamic State did morally bankrupt? Now, folks, it is morally bankrupt. But think of the United States and its shock and awe bombing Iraq, its cities, Baghdad, Fallujah. We use cluster bombs. We use busting bombs. Think of what we did and the number of people killed. You know, the estimates are anywhere from several hundred thousand to a million. None of whom had attacked an American. None of whom had killed an American. None of whom had even the ability nor the inclination to attack America. And we struck first. So, do you care who struck first? Do you care who killed civilians and who killed armed belligerents? You know, there was one CNN newscaster said, you know, this thing is just so disgusting, it's so cowardly. You've got all these men in masks standing around with a man in a cage and lighting him on fire. It's so cowardly. And you think it's heroic to fly cruise missiles over targets? You think it's courageous to fly a fighter or a bomber over a city and drop your bombs from high altitude? Do you think it is courageous to fly a drone and kill 4,000 people in their homes? And somehow watching your victim die, that's indeed what happened, is less courageous, is more cowardly than what we have done? The fact is here, Islam is evil. Islam is a criminal enterprise. Islam was born as a criminal enterprise with the Battle of Badr, which wasn't a battle, it was a robbery, it was piracy, combined with merciless acts of enraged terror and mass murder and mutilation, all perpetrated by Muhammad. Because he coveted what others had, which was money. That Islam was born as a criminal enterprise. It was born in blood. And is pure evil. But who are we to pass that verdict? And listen to our response. What did Jordan do? It killed three of its prisoners, and then what did it do? It said, we're going to bomb all the more. Wake up. We had purported videos of the Islamic State beheading individuals, which is something that Muhammad did with great regularity. I mean, on one day, he beheaded 900 men and boys, right in his presence, while he forced the women and children to watch. So, if killing somebody so personally, individually, so savagely, with their arms and legs bound, where you're the only one that has weapons, and where you're killing innocent civilians who have never attacked you, and you're armed and they're not armed, and they're bound, and Muhammad is systematically, while he is watching and while he's forcing their wives and their daughters to watch, is decapitating 900 men and boys, throwing their heads and their bodies into a trench in the central marketplace of Medina. If one of these beheadings is too grotesque, too repulsive to watch, if that demonstrates pure evil, then why don't we hold Muhammad accountable? Why don't we? Why is somebody like the Abominator so disgustingly dishonest to say that these beheadings aren't Islamic? When in fact Muhammad, who is the lone spokesperson for Allah and the lone founder of Islam, the basis entirely and individually and uniquely for Sharia, when he does far worse, and it's all detailed by the first Muslims, why don't we not only make the connection, but to hold the resulting religion in contempt? Why? Because it's popular? Why? Because it's against political correctness? Why? Because we prefer the lies? Why? Because we're going to use this as justification for targeting the Islamic State as if they were Al-Qaeda, as if we were fighting terrorists as opposed to a religious enemy? Why? Because people can't handle the truth? Because you're afraid of the truth? Because the truth makes everyone in the U.S. military, everyone in the U.S. intelligence agencies, every American politician, every person in the American media out to be not only a liar, but grotesquely immoral for aiding and abetting the very disease, the dogma that is causing all of this carnage? And so, you've got three problems here, America. The first is a complete inability to associate this bad behavior with a religion. When Muhammad is documented time and time again in the Quran, in the Hadith, by the first Muslims, in the oldest books that exist about the formation of this religion, is documented constantly, persistently, as a terrorist, as a mass murderer, as someone who engaged in sadistic behavior, as someone who not only beheaded, but encouraged his followers to behead, to mutilate, and then to gloat over the mutilated bodies, while at the same time shouting that Allah is greater, recognizing that Allah is nothing more than an extension of Muhammad's persona. That's why he's so twisted. That's why both Muhammad and Allah claim to be terrorists. That's why both Allah and Muhammad say that stealing is lawful and good. Lying is good. Killing is the single greatest religious act a Muslim can perform. Both Muhammad and Allah speak with one voice because they're one and the same. The evidence is undeniable. It's irrefutable. It's ubiquitous. It's easy to find. So problem one is there is a wholesale ignorance in America, an unwillingness to face the facts. Problem number two is that America and the world won't allow you to see the face of this evil. They not only don't want you to consider the Islamic source material, the Quran and Hadith, they don't want you to watch the expression of Islam today because it hasn't migrated one iota from what it was 1,400 years ago. They don't want you to witness what Islam does to people. And number three, we're worse than they are. We have Glenn, who I think has a comment actually on the Abominator. Hello, Glenn.
Yes. Well, not Obama per se. Actually, I was just calling to answer your question, which you've just actually sort of answered. And that is why won't they do this? Well, and I was going to say, you just mentioned the source material. If you define the religion of Islam as being defined by its doctrinal base of the Quran and the Hadith, and that's something, mm-hmm. and look to the source materials as the doctrinal base, then you can't avoid this. However, the modern manipulators, they know that the masses aren't literate. They know people do not know the doctrine of their own supposedly professed religions. They know that they don't read the books, and they don't hold their leadership accountable, you know, for adhering to the doctrine. I mean, look at Pope Francis. The guy hasn't found a Catholic doctrine he isn't willing to trash, you know.
Correct.
I mean, he's just totally off the reservation, loose cannon on deck. And everybody loves him, right?
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of one of the things that's so interesting about Francis, and we'll go back to the your main point, is that all of the Catholic popes have claimed to be infallible, and they've claimed to be God's spokesperson on earth. So how can Francis contradict all of the infallible doctrine of his predecessors and be infallible?
Now, that's a much mistaken notion that people have. The Pope is never, they're not considered infallible. He is considered the vicar of Christ, the vicarious.
Let me finish. Yeah.
The Pope is not infallible except when he is making an ex cathedra statement from the throne of St. Peter. And there have only been like about, I think, 3 ex cathedra statements made like in the 20th century or something like that. Otherwise, the Pope is not, because this is a common misnotion among Catholics and non-Catholics alike, he is not considered infallible except when making ex cathedra statements. And you have to see this great ornate throne called the Throne of St. Peter that he goes to, and there are only very, very few ex cathedra statements. Otherwise, he's not infallible.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made both ways, because the Roman Catholic Church has wavered on this issue and has established points of view that establish him as infallible and that establish him as someone who is inspired by the Holy Spirit and yet can, and sometimes, in fact, when the Pope will make a really stupid statement, his press secretary will say, you know, that was just his personal opinion. He was not speaking from someone on the seat of the throne of St. Peter. Now, beyond the fact that St. Peter wasn't a saint, Peter wasn't a saint. Peter wasn't his name. He didn't have a throne. He wasn't a Christian. He most certainly wasn't a Catholic. And he wasn't a pope. Beyond all of that, the Roman Catholics have been conditioned over time to view any edict by the Pope as being between inspired and infallible, depending on the level of
absolutely.
Statement.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so how can the previous Pope be infallible and inspired if he's contradicting essentially everything he says? It gets, by the way, right back to the Christian New Testament. Since the Christian New Testament claims to be inspired and it contradicts what was said by those who were inspired and who actually were infallible, you have to be irrational to believe it.
Well, the notion of a Christian New Testament canon is a very great misnotion. At no time was the gavel ever brought down on, you know, the canonicity of the 27 books we see in the
The Council of Nicaea. That wasn't its purpose. The purpose of the Council of Nicaea was to create the Christian God for the Roman Catholic Church.
A lot of people date it to the Council of Joppa, but even then, that's not, the gavel was never really brought down on any sort of thing called a New Testament canon.
But let's just say that it was. That would be men voting on whether or not a book should be included or not, and it's put into a group of books that, where half of them is written by a man who was wholly and completely contradictory of the God he said inspired him. But we're off track here, talking about the failings and the irrational nature of Christianity. What we have here is a indication that you don't have to be a Christian or a Muslim to be irrational. For the talking heads in politics, the Abominator, for example, and other politicians around the world, to be condemning the burning of the pilot alive, if that indeed is what happened, and calling it savage and immoral, and not recognize that we struck first. We killed them first. What we did was far more savage, far less moral, and we can't make that connection. It tells me that you don't have to be religious to be irrational, to be immoral.
Absolutely not. When I always remember back to my days in junior ROTC in high school, you know, talking about the concept of, I remember my major like to talk the superiority of the Air Force lifestyle, because at the end of the day, you know, you got to fly home and sleep on clean sheets and have, you know, a nice chicken dinner or something, you know, and you didn't have to be up close and personal when you killed. You know, you flew over and you dropped your coordinates, and then it was standoff weaponry.
Yeah. You know, and even in the case of the Islamic State, let's say that the two American journalists were actually killed by them. And we don't know, because we've not seen their death. That was a propaganda video. But let's say that occurred. When are you moral? How many do you kill in response to be moral? A French soldier was stabbed today while protecting a Jewish center. According to CNN, ISIS issued orders encouraging knife attacks. Upon learning that the attacker had the same name as one of the attackers in a previous murder, Wolf Blitzer of CNN asked, "One of the attackers has the same last name. Do you think it's a random coincidence, or is there a connection?" The name was Islamic. You know, why do you think, Glenn, that there is more individual acts of Islamic terrorism in France than we're witnessing in the United States? There's a correct answer here.
Oh, there's a correct answer?
There is a correct answer. I'm not asking actually for an opinion.
Well, in France, I don't know. The France thing is incongruous because France was actually siding on behalf of Palestine recently, and France was also, cutting back on sanctions against Russia and Iran. And
yeah, it has nothing to do with the France. The issue is what you're demonstrating. Yeah, what you're demonstrating is the answer has nothing to do with the French. So why is France experiencing far more Islamic terrorist attacks and Islamic savagery than we're witnessing in the United States?
Maybe because they're more tolerant of it. They're more leftist. They're more liberal. More socialist. I don't know. Okay, you got me. I give up. What's the answer?
Because there's between 6 and 9 million Muslims in France, country about a quarter the size of the United States, where there are about 3 million Muslims. Muslims represent less than 1% of U.S. citizenry. And the Muslims represent about 9-10% of France. There are more of them per capita. And where there are more Muslims, there is more terrorism.
Right. And you could make a connection, a historical connection, between the fact that there are more Muslims there and the leftist inclinations of France in the recent decades. It was probably, you know, their left leanings that allowed for all this immigration in the first place.
Yeah. But, you know, that's not to say that America isn't susceptible to this. At the University of California, Davis, which is essentially an agricultural school, anti-Israel activists by the many thousands packed an arena there and heckled Jewish students with shouts of Allahu Akbar at a vote to endorse a boycott of the Jewish state. The Free Beacon reports that the outburst came when pro-Israeli students tried to counter a student government resolution to divest from Israel. Now, mind you, Israel is the only quasi-moral, civil island in a sea of Islamic terrorism, of Islamic just malfeasance in every possible way. You know, no free speech, no freedom of religion, no prosperity, horrific treatment of women everywhere around Israel, and wars blazing all around Israel, and dictatorships imposing hellish conditions on their people all around Israel, and yet want to divest oneself as a university student from the one sane place in the middle of this insanity. The activists were waving Palestinian flags, not even knowing there is no such thing as a Palestinian, and shouted at pro-Israel students as they walked out ahead of a 8-2 vote for divestment. A video provided to the newspaper by pro-Israeli student groups, Aggies for Israel, showed a group shouting, and the auditorium was filled, Allahu Akbar in unison as the pro-Israeli students walked out. The vote was supported by the pro-Hamas students group. You can imagine that, UC Davis. They allow a pro-Hamas student groups, Students for Justice in Palestine. Think about the lie on that. Students, Justice, Palestine. According to the anti-Islamic extremist group, the Clarion Project, the anti-Islamic extremism group. Now, I don't know what they mean by anti-Islamic extremism. I mean, if you're anti-Islamic, then you're opposed to Islamic terrorism, not Islamic extremism. The student declared afterward on her Facebook page that Hamas and Sharia law have taken over Davis. She said later that Israel will fall, Allah willing. Wow. Even in an agricultural school in the center of California, Islam has infected everyone.